simplifying a complex, confusing world. The Explainers, only on The Podcaster.
Tigers, lions, leopards, panthers, lynxes, snow leopards, and cheetahs. Our fascination with the big cats of the world has a storied history. We are in awe of them, we find them beautiful, we find them scary, and that is precisely why humanity has always wanted to either tame them or kill them. Not too different historically from how the world has dealt with women, but that is a different podcast. The point is, so many mythologies are rooted in somebody vanquishing one of these big cats. And one such big cat has been in the news. And that is the point of this inaugural episode of The Explainers. I am an explainer giving this explainer on The Explainers because I got some explaining to do. This time, it's about cheetahs in India. Are they being introduced or reintroduced? Have they ever been indigenous to this country? Is Kuno a good habitat for them? What do the cheetahs need to survive? And will they survive here in India? Does the government's plan that it will actually rehabilitate the grasslands have any merit at all? Do the indigenous cats and other wild populations face threats from the cheetahs? And do the cheetahs themselves face threats from these animals? Whose great plan was this? Where were the origins of this plan? Is it harebrained or is it foxy? Animal metaphors, ding, ding, ding. Has there been resistance in the courts to this plan? And what is the latest news about these cheetahs that have come from Namibia? Now, you may have heard spirited debates about the same on television. With spirited, I mean there was too much shouting and you turned it off, which is precisely why Harish, my colleague, and I sat down with books and papers ranging from, I'm not even lying, from the mid-1800s all the way to what's going on now. Second Life, India's Cheetah Gamble. What is it all about and what do the experts have to say about it is the topic of the very first episode of The Explainers. This is The Podcaster and my name is Rakesh Sharma.
We help you understand the world. The Explainers, only on The Podcaster. The Podcaster.
All right. The cheetahs have not been seen in India since 1952, but are now back in the news thanks to the central government's desire to rectify that situation. On the 16th of September, Prime Minister Modi released 8 cheetahs into a temporary habitat in Kuno Palpur National Park in Madhya Pradesh, as I'm certain you've all seen, including the camera with the lens lit. Quite the birthday gift on the 16th of September, and quite the PR coup too, considering on the 17th of September, he also released the National Logistics Policy and said logistics in India should be progressing at the speed of a cheetah. The cheetahs were transported from Namibia to Kuno as part of India's ambitious and controversial plan to reintroduce these extinct animals in India's forests. Now, reintroduce, this is what we'll be looking into in a little detail. But first, let's take a look at this movement of cheetahs across continents in aircrafts. Back in September, 8 cheetahs, 5 females and 3 males were flown in from Namibia's capital Windhoek in a customized Boeing 747-400 aircraft to Gwalior. The 11-hour flight marked the first time that a big cat was moved from one continent to another to be reintroduced in a forested area. This is supposed to be the first phase of a multi-year plan by the government to reintroduce cheetahs in India. You see, cheetahs have been officially extinct in our country since 1952. It is estimated that the last cheetah, the kind that they say is native to India, was hunted down by an Indian royal, Maharaja Pratap Singh Dev, 5 years earlier, in 1947, in what is today the state of Chhattisgarh. 70 years since cheetahs have gone extinct in India officially, and 75 Amrit Mahotsav since the last recorded encounter with one in the wild. Now, the question is, why are we fascinated by cheetahs? We are a country that is blessed with the great big cats. We have tigers, which were on the brink of extinction but have been brought back due to successful conservation efforts. We'll talk about that in a bit. Leopards, panthers, and we have the Asiatic lion in Gir, although some people think they may not be indigenous to India either, but that's a different story, which we'll address in a little bit. But why are we fascinated by cheetahs? India has been a home, like I said, for several big cats, and we have been fascinated by them for ages. The big cats are found on Indus Valley Civilization seals. They were part of Ashokan They were part of Ashoka-era seals and capitals. Many royal mythologies have big cats prominently featured among them. I can think of Hoysala. Kannada folklore tells a legend of one young man called Sala, also known as Poisala, who, according to legend, saved his Jain guru by killing a tiger. Sometimes it is also described as a lion, but a big cat nevertheless that they encountered while in a forest. The word strike, which translates to hoi in old Kannada and hence the name Hoysala. The point I'm trying to make is big cats have featured big in our mythologies. We are terrified, fascinated, captivated, but we're also inexplicably connected to them. According to a National Geographic article from 2020, quote, India has 15 species of wild cat living within its 1.1 million square miles, accounting for 40% of all species found worldwide. Now, this amazing diversity is ruined by one glaring exception. Were it not for the loss of the Asiatic cheetah, driven to brink of extinction in India by centuries of persecution, then eradicated in the early 1950s, 16 of the 40 living species of wild cat would be found in a single country. The cheetah is an apex predator, sits atop the food chain, feeds on small and medium-sized mammals. You see, cheetahs play a significant role in maintaining overall ecological balance. Cheetahs are, of course, most famous for the fact that they are the fastest land animals. Long-legged and swift-moving, sleek and lithe, these cats can reach speeds of up to 110 kilometers per hour when they hunt. In human, or at least in car speed terms, cheetahs can go from 0 to 60 miles per hour or 0 to 96 kilometers per hour in just 3.5 seconds. These magnificent creatures can accelerate as fast as a sports car in just 3 to 4 strides. But they, of course, cannot sustain those speeds over long distances. With great speed comes great exhaustion. Their top speed drops off after 20 to 30 seconds and they need to slow down to catch their breath. The fastest recorded land speed by a mammal is held by a female cheetah called Sarah. She covered 100 meters in just 5.95 seconds. Usain Bolt, on the other hand, who holds the world record for the 100 meter sprint, covered the same distance in 9.58 seconds. So the fastest human athlete in recorded history reached a mere 28 miles per hour. Most of us average folks are much slower, much slower. And that's why we are fascinated by the cheetah. It is built to hunt down prey, and it does so in magnificent speeds. For a people obsessed with speeds and races and who comes out on top, the fascination for cheetahs is easily understandable. It's a mix of culture, prestige, and an almost visceral fascination with apex predators that translates to the kind of place cheetahs occupy in the public imagination. Also, their lithe, pretty, and have an adorably counterintuitive meow instead of a blood-curdling roar. Have you heard a cheetah roar? It's kind of cute. Listen to it. Here's one. Here's another. Is it a bird? Is it a toy car? No, it's a cheetah, an apex predator. But do those cute big cats, social media friendly cats, if you will, belong here in India? That is the question. Let's start with the basics. It's more or less understood that human activity, human presence takes a gradual toll on nature over decades or centuries. And this has happened with cheetahs as well, especially in the modern era. But things were not always this dire. It is estimated that there were approximately 1 lakh cheetahs around the world at the start of the 20th century. By 2016, this was down to under 7,000. The Asiatic cheetah's natural habitat is spread over a vast area, from the Arabian Peninsula all the way to Afghanistan and India. In India, the habitat extended all the way to Tirunelveli district in present-day Tamil Nadu and to the northeastern states as well. Experts say the word cheetah is in fact derived from a Sanskrit word, chitraka, which translates to spotted or speckled. Records from the early 17th century show that some royal families in India owned cheetahs. That's right, they owned cheetahs. There are paintings from the 1600s depicting Mughals hunting cheetahs. One popular painting from 1602 depicts Mughal prince Salim of Salim Anarkali and Mughal Azam, blindfolding a cheetah after a hunt. Salim would of course go on to become Jahangir, and his father, Akbar, everybody's favourite, is said to have owned 1,000 cheetahs. Yep, 1,000 cheetahs. Now, where did this claim come from? Well, Divya Bhanu Singh, a former vice president of the Bombay Natural History Society, noted in his book, The End of a Trail, The Cheetah in India, that Akbar, who ruled between 1556 and 1605, had 1,000 cheetahs. They were used for hunting, black buck and gazelle. But such claims are, of course, contentious. Yusuf Ansari, a Mughal history specialist himself and one of the co-authors of Exotic Aliens, The Lion and Cheetah in India, which was written alongside Valmik Thapar and Romila Thapar, clarified, and I quote, "I don't believe that the imperial stable ever held 1,000 cheetahs at a particular time. If indeed the emperor had a collection of 1,000, these must have included numbers that ranged in the imperial hunting grounds and royal parks as well." Now, this skepticism is a fascinating new twist in the origin story of the Indian cheetah, but it is not unfounded. Why? Well, strap in, because the truth is about to get a little bit weird. Some experts claim that there is no such thing as an Indian cheetah. Nope, nada. They say the Asiatic cheetah is not native to India and was in fact brought here by merchants, envoys from foreign kings, etc. in large numbers over the last several centuries. Historian Romila Thapar offers a hypothesis that overturns conventional wisdom that lions and cheetahs are historically native to India, something the Indian establishment has always taken for granted. She told renowned conservationist Bittu Sehgal in an interview, and I quote, "References to the roar of the lion go back to the Rigveda of the late 2nd millennium BC. But the Rigveda was the text of the particular area of the borderlands in the northwest towards Bactria and of the Punjab. It was not a text referring to all of India. The composers of the hymns or their forefathers could have met the lion or heard about it from its presence in the adjoining Oxus Valley. There is one fierce animal that is clearly said to be indigenous to India and is described by Ctesias, who lived at the Persian court in the 6th century BC. This animal is neither a lion by any stretch of the imagination nor a cheetah, and most scholars who have studied the text tend to identify it as the tiger," unquote. She claims that while the tiger was the more familiar animal for those ancient Indians and therefore indigenous, the lion may have entered the scene later. And the same goes for the cheetah as well. So, not so Indian after all. Just like all the most popular dishes that we consider Indian and claim Indian are not actually Indian. But that is for another podcast. Now this unexpected twist is not a claim just from Romila Thapar alone. The origins of the cheetah in India remain murky. A 2008 PhD thesis titled Forest of Lions and Men, Human-Animal Relationships in the Gir Forest, India by Sheena Singh of the University of Virginia went on to say, and I quote, "As for the Asiatic cheetah, the cat specialist group of the International Union for Conservation of Nature, IUCN, took a position in 1981 that it would be sufficient to conclude that cheetahs were not native to Rajasthan, a state encompassing the most apt environment to support a wild cheetah population." In his thought-provoking and in many ways groundbreaking book, Exotic Aliens, that I mentioned earlier, conservationist Valmik Thapar backs the claim that neither the lion nor the cheetah is indigenous to India. He said, and I quote, "With cheetahs, there are endless tributes and gifts during the Mughal period and literally hundreds from Africa early in the 20th century. Both lions and cheetahs, therefore, have African connections in their history in India. I reached my conclusions because the number of lions and cheetahs were never sufficient for them to have been a distinct species in India. Cheetahs roamed across India on leashes and in their thousands. This was an imported royal pet, and many escaped during their training and on sport hunts with human handlers," unquote. Now, this speculation can't be dismissed offhand. You see, despite the claims of large numbers of cheetahs during the Mughal era, breeding cheetahs for hunting and keeping them in captivity has been a notoriously difficult problem, one that never has had an answer, and so their population declined. In fact, there is only one recorded instance of a cheetah litter ever being bred in captivity within India. Divya Bhanu Singh claims that the British, who usurped power from the Mughals, demonstrated little interest in capturing cheetahs in India, indulging in the sport only occasionally. So a lot of historians, prominent historians and conservationists, seem to believe that the cheetah may not have had an indigenous Indian presence at all. In any case, given the fascination with the big cats, Indian royal families and British colonial officers loved the prestige of hunting. They hunted tigers, lions, panthers, leopards, cheetahs by the hundreds, leading to a massive drop in the population of these big cats. One estimate from 1799 put the number of cheetahs in the wild at approximately 230. We've all seen old photographs of the busts of big cats and other hunting trophies adorning walls in the bungalows and palaces of royal families and rich people of yore. Creepy, I know. Well, that indulgence and the overall lionizing of hunting had a catastrophic effect, obviously, along with the depredations that the advancement of human civilization anyway wrought on animal habitats. Another big factor for the decline in the population of these imported pets, if you will, was human progress. Growing human populations devastated the forests where cheetahs in India lived and led to a precipitous drop in their numbers. Human settlements and villages encroached on the cheetah's natural habitat, the grasslands and the forest. The clash between human progress and animal habitat is a quintessential story of humans. We grow in number, build more houses, farm our food and domesticate some animals, and this encroaches upon forests that house tigers, leopards, cheetahs, etc., which then leads to conflict. The cycle repeats until the predators either become extinct or are fenced off in sanctuaries. We see evidence of such run-ins even today. The odd news story of a leopard inside the IIT Bombay campus, or a wild big cat loitering inside an apartment complex in Thane, or indeed, an acquaintance of mine whose house is in Kunur and he has dogs, and a leopard came in to pick the dog off. They all serve as reminders that we humans have merely crowded them out. But of course, there is another perspective to be had here, one beautifully explored by Amitav Ghosh in The Hungry Tide, where a person belonging to one of the indigenous communities has been forced to move away because that area has been cordoned off as a tiger sanctuary. The person who belongs to a community that has lived and survived and depended on these forests for thousands of years goes on to ask, "Is my life not important? In your bid to increase the numbers of these tigers, why am I being uprooted and why are my ways of life not considered important enough to be sustained?" It's an incredibly important point of view to have. And as an aside, encourage you to read not only The Hungry Tide by Amitav Ghosh, but a lot of his writings, which I believe are incredibly important. In any case, all of these factors that I just mentioned combine to deal a deadly blow to the cheetah population in India, whether or not indigenous. So in an effort to restore this dwindling population, various Indian princes imported around 200 African cheetahs between 1918 and 1945. Now that's right, as Europe lurched from one great war to another, the first to the second, India's royal families worked to restore India's cheetah population by importing African cheetahs. That does sound like a situation that we are in right now. History does not repeat, it does rhyme. Despite all that, the Asiatic cheetah is now close to extinction. Well, more like on the brink of it, really. A nudge or two, and it's gone forever. It has been extirpated or eradicated locally in the entire habitat from Arabia to India, except in one place, and that's Iran. At last count, only a dozen or so cheetahs survive across Iran's hinterland. Even Iran has had problems. It used to have hundreds of cheetahs up until the 1970s, but it has just 12 recorded cheetahs in the wild today. Some other estimates claim that there were between 75 and 100 Asiatic cheetahs across Iran and southwestern Pakistan around 2008, but that estimate has not been verified.
We help you understand the world. The Explainers, only on The Podcaster. The Podcaster. The Podcaster.
Let's now circle back to the now. Is Kunur the right home for African cheetahs? Now, first of all, there's a difference between African cheetahs and Asiatic cheetahs. I'm not going to bore you with those differences, but the split happened perhaps 32 to 67,000 years ago. African cheetahs are bigger, Asiatic cheetahs are slightly smaller. The Asiatic ones have a more powerful neck and slender legs in comparison to the African cheetahs. Now, they came to Kunur. Why Kunur? Back in 2010, a two-year survey scanned for favorable conditions across 10 possible locations for reintroducing cheetahs across Gujarat, Rajasthan, Chhattisgarh, and Madhya Pradesh. Finally, Kunur Palpur National Park in Madhya Pradesh was chosen as a suitable habitat with an adequate prey base. The park is part of the Shevpur-Shivpuri deciduous open forest landscape, has an area of about 748 square kilometers. Among India's sanctuaries, Kunur, they said, bears the closest resemblance to the eastern Namibian landscape, which is home to the 8 cheetahs flown in from Namibia, with dry savanna forest, scrubs and grasslands, as well as the perennial Kunur River flowing through the terrain. Kuno, they said, could provide one of the best chances for cheetahs to acclimate to Indian conditions. But there are, of course, conservationists who claim that this is simply not a suitable area for the cheetah. The cheetah needs open, wide landscapes where they can actually generate the speeds that they are known for. They cannot be bumping into obstacles such as boulders or trees or what have you. They need open landscapes, as you would find in the savannas. Some other experts, though, believe that with adequate preparations, it can sustain as many as 21 cheetahs. Those preparations were in fact not vague promises. Much work had already been done because Kuno was being considered as a second location for the endangered Asiatic lion as a backup to the lion population in Gir, so to speak, in case they were hit by any disease. Kuno Palpur is also special for another reason. One report by Scroll went on to say Kuno is probably the only wildlife site in the country where there has been a complete relocation of villages from inside the park, meaning it has been planned or customized for wildlife conservation. Kuno could potentially house the four big cats of India, tiger, lion, leopard, and cheetah, and allow them to coexist as they have done, historically. While Meek Thapar, an outspoken critic of the project, is simply not convinced. Fearing for the cheetah's survival, he says, and I quote, "Kuno Palpur as an area is home to the Indian leopard, the occasional tiger, and lots of hyenas. Leopards, tigers, and hyenas are enemies of cheetahs. When the cheetahs are finally released into the forest, they will have to deal with their number one enemy, which is the leopard. The leopard population will climb to 400 leopards, the hyenas will be in their hundreds, and both these animals will tear apart any cheetahs that you introduce. You're planning 35 to 50 cheetahs in the next 5 to 10 years? The cheetah has no hope in this." Unquote. No words spared there. Thapar also says African cheetahs live on Thompson's gazelles and small antelope in Africa. And he says, "We have not prepared or rehabilitated black buck herds. We have not rehabilitated Indian chinkara or four-horned antelopes. So what are the cheetahs going to run after? So we have an area with lots of problems." He also then warns that introducing an exotic species will make indigenous species suffer tremendously. Thapar claims forest officers will have their hands full ensuring the mere survival of these cheetahs, perhaps at the cost of them ignoring the other indigenous species that have always existed there. Vaibhi Jhala of the Wildlife Institute of India told the Indian Express that a four-member delegation from South Africa, which visited the parks in Kuno and adjoining Ranthambore in September, was initially apprehensive about the survival of cheetahs in India. He went on to say, and I quote, "The delegation saw that tigers, which are fiercer than cheetahs, were living in Ranthambore with merely a boundary wall dividing the forest area from the rural population. The cheetahs are far less a threat to human life and livestock." So clearly, there are risks and payoffs. The most obvious challenge that this project faces is the lack of adequate prey in Kuno for the African cheetahs. But Indian officials claim that Kuno has a very good prey base for cheetahs, comprising, like I said earlier, the four-horned antelope, chinkara, nilgai, wild pig, spotted deer, and sambar. Another concern is that the introduction of the cheetah into India will bring new diseases in the country, or that they would die from diseases picked up in India. While some experts have tried to assuage those fears, it remains to be seen how the cheetahs adapt. Now, this is a good time to also remember that cheetahs are notoriously difficult to breed in captivity. As many as 35 cheetahs have been brought to India over the decades, but all of them died in 6 different zoos in India: Hyderabad, New Delhi, Kanpur, Kolkata, Trivandrum, and Mysore. Reports say that they died due to improper care and diseases, but whatever the truth may be, the reality is that cheetahs have been very difficult to sustain in India. Professor Adrian Todiff of the University of Pretoria has been closely involved with this plan. He says he's estimating that at least 50 or 60 cheetahs will go to India within the next 5 or 6 years, and he also thinks there'll be a lot of scientific collaboration and so on and so forth. He did highlight a uniquely Indian problem that free-roaming cattle may be a major challenge to the introduction of cheetahs in MP and Rajasthan, and the officers are not doing anything about it. "It's cows in India, Professor Todiff. Get with the plan. Nobody does anything about them." But he does remain cautiously optimistic. He says, "I saw the level of enthusiasm of the guards and the conservation people in Kuno. They're very excited, and they also realize what responsibilities are on them to look after these animals." So on the one hand, there are experts and specialists who claim that this particular habitat is A-OK, the cheetahs will survive, there will only be a growth in the number, and they have enough prey to sustain themselves. And on the other, there are several experts and specialists who say, no, 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 no.
Simplifying a complex, confusing world. The Explainers, only on The Podcaster.
Now, whose plan is this reintroduction and what precedent does it have? This has been in the conversation ever since the 50s. A 2015 research paper by the Center for the Advanced Study of India at UPenn, University of Pennsylvania, noted that in 1955, the then State Wildlife Board of Andhra Pradesh suggested the reintroduction of the Asiatic cheetah in at least two districts of the state. Journalist Aditya Tarar noted last month that in the first meeting of the Wildlife Board in independent India in 1952, the government had suggested daring experiments for their conservation, calling for special priority to the protection of cheetahs in central India. That review, of course, led to more studies and eventually negotiations with the government of Iran, which fell through for more than one reason. There was political instability because the Shah just had been deposed, and because of all of those issues in Iran, no real headway was made. Again, sounds familiar, no? Another story claims that Iran did agree to give India a pair of cheetahs in exchange for a pair of wild lions, but Gujarat said, nope, no lions from us. Then there were talks with the Kenyan government in the 80s, and no result. And there were already talks in the early 2000s with the Namibian authorities, and I don't know where that went. But interestingly, India also requested Iran, once again, for access to the Asiatic cheetahs in an attempt to clone them at the Center for Cellular and Molecular Biology in Hyderabad. Yep, cloning. I mean, don't tell me I didn't warn you. A lot of this reads like satire. In any case, enter Jairam Ramesh. He was Minister of State for Environment and Forests in 2009, and as part of the UPA2 administration, launched something called Project Cheetah, which is clearly inspired by Project Tiger, which had been so successful in reviving the numbers of tigers. The numbers of tigers in 1973 were as low as 268, and now we might have anywhere between 2600 and 3300. So, exciting. So, Project Cheetah. Jairam Ramesh recently shared a letter from 2009 where he instructed Dr. M.K. Ranjit Singh of the Wildlife Trust of India to prepare a detailed roadmap for the reintroduction of cheetahs in India, including potential sites for the reintroduction. Now, just as a sidebar, hunting of tigers was allowed by the government of India, and a tiger shoot complete with travel, boarding, etc. cost you 40,000 rupees or about 10 lakh rupees in today's money. Do you know when the licenses for this hunting were finally abolished? 1970. That, of all the things I found in this story, I found the most mind-blowing. In any case, Jairam Ramesh wanted to adopt a similar approach of wanting to revive cheetahs in India, and it looked like it was taking shape until came down the hammer of the Supreme Court in 2013. The Supreme Court stated in its order, and it's good to hear this, at this stage, in our view, the decision taken by the Ministry of Environment, Forest and Climate Change for introduction of African cheetahs first to Kuno and then the Asiatic lion is arbitrary and illegal and clear violation of the statutory requirements provided under the Wildlife Protection Act. The order of the MOEF to introduce African cheetahs into Kuno cannot stand in the eye of law, and the same is squashed. And there died that dream, and the cheetah program was put on the back burner. And 7 years later, in 2020, the National Tiger Conservation Authority approached the Supreme Court for the reintroduction of cheetahs in India. This time around, the Supreme Court was, surprise, surprise, amenable to the idea, and the government released a cheetah action plan in 2021. So this is a story of how it all came to be, for it to conclude in an extraordinary soundbite, because, well, Modi ji declared there is a connection with the launch of national logistics policy and the release of cheetahs on the same day. We want our logistics to move at the same speed of the cheetah. Pehle hum kabutar chhodte the, aaj cheetah chhod rahe hain. Wow. But how are things going in Kuno? Well, Kuno authorities are facing delays in issues like electrification of the park's outer fence, clearing of dense vegetation that could impede the cheetahs, safety risks from open wells, water supply issues, adequate tracking equipment, meat storage facilities, etc., etc. But according to the Cheetah Action Plan, 40% of tourist revenue would be ploughed back in the buffer zone towards local community welfare, with preference to those communities that have been resettled from within Kuno. You know, jobs, guides, guards, safari organizers. We'll be training them for these jobs, says a forest officer. Well, another 12 cheetahs are expected from South Africa in the near future. 5 to 10 cheetahs will be introduced annually in India over a period of 5 to 10 years. Many more locations like Bunny Grasslands in Gujarat and the Desert National Park near Jaisalmer in Rajasthan will also be prepared for this next phase of chitraks coming back in. So the question, at least in my mind, is any need? But of course, the bigger question is, will this be a failure or a success? Only time will tell. We have tried to provide you what one side has to say, what the other side has to counter that with. Do write into us and tell us what you think. social@thepodcaster.in. I'd love to hear what you have to say. Until the next time, this is me, Rakesh, signing off on this inaugural episode of The Explainers. We'll be back next week with another explainer, trying to explain things to ourselves along the process. Thanks for joining us.
We help you understand the world. The Explainers, only on The Podcaster. The Podcaster. The Podcaster.